Guys, Roland here. And there's one thing I remember, especially after my spiritual awakening, is that this life we're living in and all we're experiencing it is actually a very beautifully designed experience that supports us in one way or another, including, and I'm not kidding, death. And we'll get into this some more right after the intro here.
Welcome to Conversations with Roland, where the goal of this show is to learn life secrets through diverse experiences. I am your host, Roland Achenjang.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Conversations with Roland. As always, I am super excited to record these conversations, and today is no different. And I'm sure you're aware today we're going to be talking about the experience of death and what that means for us. Is it really the end? Is there more to it? And I have the best guest. I'm not kidding. He's a best-selling author who inspires audiences internationally with his intriguing story of perseverance and inner strength. He had a near-death experience after a car accident in which, get this, he lost his wife and his son, a young baby who was actually a miracle baby. My understanding is he and his wife weren't supposed to have a baby at this time. And he had another son with him in the car who got out of the accident unscathed, miracle. And then he, my guest, unfortunately, or not unfortunately, as a blessing, and you'll come to realize this, required 18 surgeries to heal physically. Now, his emotional healing following the accident didn't require any surgeries, but he was still able to overcome all the emotional pain that was a result of the accident. Now, this experience transformed his life naturally, and he now has insights about life that most of us don't. And he has shared this in his books, and most recently in his book called Knowing, which builds on the information he shared in his other books, including Beyond Mile Marker 80 and I Knew Dear Hearts, all available on Amazon. There'll be links in the notes section of this podcast to get them. I encourage you to get them. But anyway, with all of this, he's very, very, very proud of the fact that he's a husband, a father, and a friend. And I, Roland, I'm just happy that he's willing to chat with me today. So with all my heart, I'd like to welcome Jeff Olson to Conversations with Roland.
Wow, Roland, thank you. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. And it's a pleasure to be with you, my friend. It is my honor. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. No, it really is an amazing thing that you and I are conversating right now. And the way we connected, it's a long story. I started with Leslie Lupo. She connected me with IANS because of my interest and fascination with this whole idea of death and whether or not it's the end. I spoke to a couple of folks, including Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll, who is a mutual friend. And that's how we connected. And I'm happy we're here and we're talking today. This is going to be a great conversation.
Yeah. Dr. O'Driscoll was my emergency level one trauma physician at the time of my accident. We were strangers. I'd never met him. He didn't know me. But based on many of the events that took place, we'd become dear friends. So I'm glad he introduced us and made the connection.
Indeed. Likewise. And for anyone who's listening, you can go back and listen to actually that conversation I recorded with Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll. And he does mention it in there where he had a shared near-death experience with one of his patients. Lo and behold, his patient's name was Jeff as well. So what are the odds? But, you know, one thing, your story is very well documented. There are all kinds of documentaries out there, a really great one by Shane, who's a filmmaker, Anthony Shane from, I think he's based out of Paris in France. Very great documentary. You've spoken internationally all over the world. I mean, audiences all over the world know you. Mine are not going to know you as well. But I think let's kind of take it to where this all began, which is kind of around that the accident, right? Where if you don't mind just telling us a little bit about that day.
No, I don't mind at all. And one thing, you know, Roland, to be clear on, just with everyone listening, I had no intention of ever being an author. I had no intention of ever talking about what happened to me. I was a very private person. Some of the things that went on, I did not share except with very close friends and family members. And so it's quite ironic, you know, that I'm telling this story and doing it at this scale. But I'll tell you, it's interesting because when I share and what I have to share, I've found has brought healing, especially around death and loss and grief. Gosh, I've learned that death is what gives life meaning in many ways. I mean, we don't think that because we have all this fear around it. Death is the end. And yet, in my experience, it was merely the beginning. And I can share that. I mean, the near-death experience I had, and I'll be brief, and it's been 20 years. The listeners should know this happened over 20 years ago. It's still fresh like it happened yesterday. I sometimes still have a hard time talking about it. It can be emotional. But I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of what took place, and then we can get into a dialogue about it. And as Roland has pointed out, you can get Knowing on Amazon, and I go into far more detail in the book. It's a very deep personal memoir, including the near-death experience, the shared death experience, the after-death communication. But I suppose I could say I passed for a short time due to an automobile accident. And as Roland has mentioned, the whole family was in the car. It was me, my wife, and our two young sons. Spencer, my oldest, was 7 years old at the time. And Griffin, my youngest, was just a toddler. He was just 14 months old, just over a year, just learning to walk and talk. I'm not completely positive what happened. There was reports of crosswinds that were very strong. There was reports of a big truck that was driving erratically on the interstate. One of the most difficult parts of the story is, I believe what may have happened is I may have dozed off at the wheel just for a moment. But what took place was the car, I swerved to the right. I overcorrected to the left. And as I did so, I lost control of the car. And the car began to roll. And I remember all this. The car began to roll, and I had the cruise control set at 75 miles an hour. So it was a high-speed rollover. I blacked out for most of that. The accident reports say the car probably rolled 6 to 8 times. When the car came to a stop, I was completely conscious. The first thing I heard was my 7-year-old son, Spencer, my oldest son, crying in the back seat. Now, as a father, it's like, I want to get to him. Boy, I've got to get to my son. But that's when I realized that I could not move. Now, the adrenaline, you know, the extent of my injuries, I was not aware of, but I realized I was pinned either to the seat or the floorboard. I couldn't tell. There was the rancid smell of gasoline, all the broken glass. I wanted to get to my son. Now, what had actually happened was both of my legs had been crushed and shattered. My left leg was amputated above the knee eventually. My back had been broken. However, it didn't damage my spinal column by some miracle. My rib cage had been damaged. My lungs were collapsing. My right arm had almost been torn off. It had no muscle through the rotator cuff or anything holding it, and there was a large laceration underneath it. And then the seatbelt had cut through me and torn open and ruptured my intestines. I was an absolute physical mess. I was a bigger mess emotionally because not being aware of those injuries, but knowing my young son was crying and wanting to get to him, that's when I realized nobody else was crying. And I was aware at the scene of the accident that my wife, who had reclined her seat back and was napping while I drove, because she had reclined her seat, the seatbelt had not, you know, restrained her properly, and she was killed instantly at the scene. And my youngest son, Griffin, it's still hard to talk about, but his car seat had broken apart and he'd been ejected from the car. The worst hell a man could ever be in. I mean, there I was, I'm pinned, I'm losing consciousness. I've got a hysterical 7-year-old in the back seat that I know by his cry that he's okay. But I also know that my youngest son is gone. when I realized he had been ejected from the car, it was like, where's my little boy? And it was just a knowing. It just came. It's like he is gone. And I also realized that Tamara, my wife, was gone. And I don't share those things to be graphic or morbid, but it was in that deepest, darkest, dreadful moment that I felt light come. And sometimes words are difficult to put this, but it felt like light rushed to me, surrounded me, and began to comfort me in this absolutely horrific situation. It felt as if I was rising above the scene of the accident. And suddenly the pain was gone. Suddenly I could breathe. In fact, I was somewhat confused because I was thinking, how can I be okay? Not only physically, but I seemed to be comforted emotionally. And as I rose above the scene of the accident and was questioning, how can I possibly be okay? My wife, Tamara, who I knew was deceased at the scene, suddenly she was there in this light with me. And I only shared what I did because in this light, she was beautiful. She was gorgeous. There was no injuries. She was radiant and fine, but she was emphatic that I must go back. She was saying, Jeff, you can't come. You've got to go back. And we literally had this conversation about how if I went with her, we would leave our oldest son orphaned. I made a choice to come back. Now, I'm really paraphrasing things, but I learned so much about choice in that moment and that our choices are so powerful and our intentions, I mean, our thoughts are so powerful. And I said the most profound goodbye I would ever say. And then I found myself wandering around the hospital. When I say wandering, just moving freely about the hospital. Now, I have no concept of time in this light, if you will. I only realized I had wrecked the car. I had said the most profound goodbye I would ever say. And then I was in this hospital, but I later found out people had arrived at the scene. They were able to see Spencer. They had to extricate me from the car. Because of my injuries, I was life flighted to a level one trauma center. I had no idea of any of that. All I knew is that I had wrecked the car. I had said this profound goodbye. And here I was moving about, seeing the doctors and the nurses and the patients and the family of the patients in a level one trauma center.
So just to set this up, sorry to interrupt, man. I'm so captivated. This is why I love you. You're like the best experiencer recounter, right? Like you're really doing an amazing job of recounting your experience. And I hate to interrupt, but when you say you're moving in the hospital, just to be clear, you're not in your physical body, right? Because your physical body got airlifted there.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make that distinction.
Yeah, be clear. And it was quite profound because I'm saying I was wandering around the hospital. I still felt as if I was me. I still had the knowledge of the accident and what had happened. It's just that the grief and the guilt and the horror of this realm had somehow been lifted in a way. And yet as I, my consciousness, my soul, whatever you want to call it, was moving about the hospital and I'm seeing the other patients and the doctors and nurses and families, I'm seeing them in an absolute profound way. I'm connected to them. I know everything about them. And when I say that, it might sound creepy, you know, and voyeuristic, but I knew their lives. I knew what had happened to them. I knew their choices, their love, their hate, their motivations. And yet it was all encapsulated in this absolute oneness, this beautiful connection and unconditional love. And I call it now the oneness, but I was literally connected to everyone. And in a very loving way, you know, I grew up in a Christian home. We had read the Bible. And even when I was having this experience in the hospital, the famous verse came to mind that where Jesus said, inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me, which I used to think was a really nice verse about being nice. But what I was realizing is I was them. They were me. Perhaps what Jesus was saying is, I am the man in prison. I am the naked beggar on the street. We are all one. We are all connected. And this was an insight I'd never had. I mean, I was experiencing something so overwhelming until I finally came up to this body laying on the gurney that I didn't feel anything from, which I thought was odd. And that's when I stepped forward to realize, oh my goodness, that's me or my body. It wasn't me. I was having this incredible connected experience, but there was my body, you know, the skin suit, if you will, that I'd been experiencing life in.
Wow. Okay. This is so fascinating. And this is no joke. First of all, and you said this right when you started about revisiting this emotional, very trying, almost a dark experience where you lose literally half of your family and then literally half of your physical self, right? I mean, all I can say today, particularly given the experience I had with my spiritual awakening, and I say this to everybody, regardless of how we choose to qualify the extremities of what they experience, is thank you and your whole family for the bravery that you all exhibited as souls to incarnate on this planet and go through this experience, which is now an amazing teaching opportunity for all of us. Okay. I really thank you. And with that said, I mean, just so many questions to ask, right? And one part that I'm familiar with this, which you didn't share, is that before you left, you were visiting family before you got on the road. I think you were visiting your wife's family, Tamara. And before she left, she did a little double take where she went back and sort of said goodbye to her parents. And I wondered, in thinking back, if you've ever had an inclination that maybe she knew something was about to happen on this return trip.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, Roland, because there was a lot of things. Before we left on the vacation, Tamara, my wife, had a dream, which she shared with me, which was odd. And the dream, which was very disturbing to me as a man in love with his wife, and, you know, she said, I had this strange dream that you were marrying someone else. And I thought, oh my gosh, you're going to be mad at me now all day because you know, and she said, no, it was just weird. She, you know, so she had that. And as you mentioned, we visited her family. It was the Easter weekend. It was a beautiful weekend. And yeah, just as we were in the car getting ready to leave, you know, we had hugged everyone. We had said goodbye. I had put the kids in their car seat. She had gotten in the car. And just as I was ready to pull away from the curb, her mother and father, you know, grandma and grandpa were there waving on the porch like they do. And she said, stop, just a minute. I want to go say goodbye to mom and dad one more time. Now, you know, in that moment, I thought, oh, women, you know, we've said goodbye. I've got to get on the road. I mean, but in hindsight, as you said, boy, that whisper. And I did. I stopped the car and I watched and I noticed as she ran up to her mom and dad, and she not only hugged them, but she kissed them both, which was not out of the ordinary, but I noticed it. And like you say, now, did she know we were going to have the accident? Mm-hmm. I doubt it. If she knew, she'd have said, we're just going to quarantine and stay in the house and not go anywhere. But there was these little things. I call them the whispers. You know, I just want to go say goodbye to mom and dad one more time. And I don't think she knew what was going to happen, but to have her have that feeling, that little feeling, and say, I'm just going to go really hug them and really kiss them. And you know, as the day played out, that was the last goodbye. And we've discussed that. I'm still very close to her father. Her mother has now passed, but yeah, little things. And I think we all get those, you know, that those whispers, those feelings, those intuitions. Gosh, I just, maybe it's, I'm going to smile at this stranger on the street, but those are the big things if we embrace it that way.
No, that's very, very valid point. And in listening to your story, this was a question that came up for me. And, you know, even just the whole idea of death, because I thought that was interesting that she said, stop, I got to go say bye one more time. And I've come to learn that those little, like you call them, I like the word you use, whispers, but those little acts that seem so unusual, I am learning to really pay attention to them these days, just like I do everything else. But yeah. And then, of course, I have to ask you this too, because I've read a couple of books. I've had my own experiences. But one of the books I read, Journey of Souls, and then the subsequent book, Destiny of Souls. But in it, right, the author is basically interviewing a bunch of folks who are experiencing their lives between lives through hypnotism. And one thing that comes up in the second book is this whole idea of when you do cross over, these emotions that we have available to us on planet Earth are almost still available, right? Most people have this idea that when you're crossing over, or after you've crossed over, everything is amplified and then sort of tilted to the positive love. But in listening to how you describe the conversation you have with your wife in spirit form, in soul form, right? She's frantic. And that word kind of, it's like, wait, she crossed over and she's still frantic. Could you touch on that? I don't know if you get what I'm trying to get at, but if you can touch on that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I do, because it was, it's been confusing in hindsight. However, I mean, this was so fresh. We had just had the accident. Mm-hmm. And yes, she was on the other side. And yet she seemed to have this knowing. And that's, I mean, that's part of why the book is titled how it was. Yeah. Of course she was upset. You know, of course this was goodbye. I mean, you know, and she was emotional, but she seemed to have this knowing that I was to go back and that it was best that we say goodbye. And yet I'll tell you, it almost didn't even feel like a choice. It's almost like our soul's journey knew. Mm-hmm. Our higher selves knew. I mean, it was an agreement. It was a contract. And that played out very much so in later years as I, you know, got well and went home and I'm raising our son and I got, you know, back to work and learned to walk on a prosthetic. And Tamara was never, you know, she was still around. Now, it wasn't like I see dead people, but I would have dreams or inklings. And yet, even, you know, if you fast forwarded way after the accident, I eventually fell in love again. I fell in love again and I felt guilty about that. There was a lot of guilt surrounded around, gosh, I was driving the car, you know, what do I do? And yet when I began to have feelings for another woman, Tanya, my current wife, I went to my wife's grave. I went to Tamara's grave and I was distraught. And in fact, I was even a little angry at this point because I'm like, you're in that beautiful place and how dare you leave me here? I mean, I don't even walk right. I'm trying to raise our son. And as I'm kind of pouring my soul out, you know, at her tombstone, I swear she came to me. I felt her. I don't see, you know, with my eyes, but I knew she was standing behind me and it almost felt like her hands were on my shoulders and she communicated in a very powerful way. And she said, don't berate me. I loved you enough to leave. And I'm like, you loved me enough to leave? What do you mean? And it was almost, you know, she was saying, don't you remember? Mm-hmm. We had a contract. I would have loved nothing more than to stay and grow old with you, but we had decided and you would not be learning the things you're learning or experiencing the things you're experiencing had I not loved you enough to go. And of course I said, well, I'm having feelings for another woman. And this was odd because she almost laughed at me and said, of course you are. Of course you are. I want you to be happy. I'm here watching you suffer and grieve. And it was interesting because she said, we're still connected and I can only be as happy as you are. So choose joy, please. And, you know, and I know that sounds really, really odd on many levels, but that was my experience. And it was very healing and yet also very surprising. And also many of the things I've experienced, I have to process for a while because they might not make sense at face value.
Usually they don't. It's one reason why I started meditating, because my rational mind was beginning to fail me. It didn't make, like, the life experiences I was having wasn't making sense to my rational mind. And I thought I have to find an alternate source. But this is so beautiful. And it's so nuanced in a way that I like. The whole idea of, especially here on this planet, duality. And at least in my understanding today is you can't really separate anything from anything. And in an experience like this, the amount of love, and I really do appreciate this in what your wife, Tamara, your first wife said is, I loved you enough to leave. If I didn't, you would not be learning the lessons you are learning. Like, it sounds very counterintuitive to the rational mind, but it's so beautiful. That's kind of like my understanding of why I think we're so brave to come and experience a life on Earth. Again, it's because we have the opportunity to deal with these nuances, which is always pushing us to remember, right? Remember who we truly are and why we're here doing this. This trying experience, which is basically an opportunity for conscious expansion. But we'll keep going. I love this. You're so awesome. And so you find, I got to kind of fast forward to where you find yourself in the hospital. Now, we've established that you were in spirit form. Could the others see you or sense your presence?
I didn't have any gauge on that. Apparently not. Because I was moved by people and no one was looking at me. No one was speaking to me. You know, it was just, I was having the experience and I was very aware of them.
Yeah.
But I did not get the sense that they were aware of me at all.
Okay. And then any sensations at this time of actually like physical, could you feel like you were walking on the hospital floor? Did you feel like, oh, maybe I might need to take a bathroom break or any of those?
Yeah, no, and Mike, that's how I say words are difficult because I was moving about the hospital freely, free mm-hmm. of pain. But when I came to my own body and knew I had to get back in, and here again, our thoughts are so powerful. I didn't have to figure out how I was going to get back in the body. It was my intention. I'm going back in. And yet there was some sadness. I standing over my own body that was so badly damaged, I had this epiphany that, wow, I never realized what a miracle, what a magnificent machine my body was. I didn't have to tell my eyes how to see or my heart how to beat or my lungs how to breathe. They just have intelligence within them that does so. So there was this very deep connection to, wow, there's my body and I have taken it for granted my whole life. And now it's so broken, but I got to get back in there. And getting back in, like I say, was the thought, you know, it was as I'm going back in, but then boy, back to the grief, the guilt, the pain, the trauma. I was intubated. They had a big tube down my throat doing the breathing for my lungs. My legs were obviously immobile. And as I say, they had to amputate the left leg because of the injuries. My right arm was immobile. They eventually tied down my left arm because I kept grabbing at all the medical equipment. And I was in the hospital for 5 months. I had 18 surgeries putting me back together. And I continued to have profound out-of-body experiences, if you will, over those months in the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just to piggyback on this, the thing you said about the realization of just how much neglect you had shown to your body. Now, interestingly for me, after 28 years and all these red flags of my rational mind failing me, and then deciding to meditate. In the moment when I decided I would, for the first time, sit down and just listen to my body, I had the same feeling. And I discuss it in my book. I felt so guilty. And really, the feeling was, I have had access to this intelligence my entire life. I mean, this is all I came to this planet with. And for some reason, I have been seeking this sort of sense of balance and peace and bliss and understanding everywhere but here. The only time I paid it attention was when it was sick or tired or cut open or something like that. And I thought, even now when I'm coming to seek attention from, you know, my body, it's when I'm feeling kind of like, man, something's got to change. And I did feel that sense of grief of, boy, oh boy, 28 years with you and I barely know thee. Let's see what we can find out. Yeah. Yeah.
And it is incredible. I mean, people say to me, well, gosh, I wish I could have miracles. I wish I could see a miracle. And I say, go look in the mirror. I mean, literally, yeah. Go look in the mirror. And I mean, there is intelligence and light in every one of our cells. I mean, it's incredible, the miracle that we are as manifestations of what I feel is divine. But yeah, we take it for granted. I was the same way. And it wasn't that I had abused my body. I mean, I ate right. I had been a Division I athlete, but it was all just a gift. I didn't even consider the fact that, wow, my feet know how to be feet. and I didn't even have to tell them. And yet now they're lopping one off above the knee, you know. There was a great deal of sadness and yet a huge awakening. I think many, you know, masters and ascended, you know, masters and these enlightened ones in the world have said, your body is a temple.
It is. I mean,
you know, the kingdom is within you. From my background, it's like, well, yeah, it is. And this body is an incredible manifestation of a miracle.
Yeah. It's fascinating to even that statement, the kingdom is within you. That's no joke. And it's that's like one of the more literal, like spiritual verses or biblical verses. Literally, it's within you. Don't look anywhere else. Start looking there. You will find it. And then everyone, like many people, even I, before I had my awakening, I would walk around saying that the kingdom's within you. But then,
you know, it's interesting because I had an upbringing. I mean, I was in church and sitting in the pews and I was hearing the sermons, but to experience something like that turns it all inside out and upside down in a very expansive way. I mean, one of the most incredible experiences I had was at the end of my hospital stay. I mean, I was out of ICU and the hospital was horrible. I kept throwing pulmonary emboli, the blood clots that lodge in your lungs. I had horrific infections because of the rupturing of my intestines and they had to leave the wounds open. And I mean, you know, pneumonias and infections and fevers and sickness. But at the end of my hospital stay, and it's probably worth mentioning, the most profound experiences I had were at the scene of the accident before any narcotics had been administered. And then at the end of my hospital stay, almost 5 months later, when I'm off of morphine, I'm off of Lortab, I'm taking some Tylenol. I was just about ready to come home, but I got a peek back into those other realms. And I'll share it briefly, but this may have been the most profound thing I experienced. I was finally able to lay on my side because they had stabilized my abdominal wounds. I had laid on my back so long that I had rubbed all the hair off the back of my head. The back of my head had become bald. And yet I was healing. I was going to get better. I knew I was going to come home. And yet I had been tortured emotionally over those months in the hospital because of my little boy that had been thrown from the car. And I had had many experiences with Tamara over that time, but not him. But that night I fell asleep. And as I was sleeping, and I was actually conscious that, wow, I'm sleeping. I fell into a peaceful sleep. And it felt like I hadn't slept for months. I mean, I was laying down and unconscious, but I didn't feel like I'd had a peaceful sleep. But that same light came, that same light that had come at the scene of the accident. I felt it and I remembered it, this comforting light. And then again, it felt like I was rising above the hospital bed. And yet this time the light dispensed, it went away. And I was in the most beautiful place. I mean, I was, and you know, people say heaven or the spirit world or the other side or the higher realms. The only word I can think of that even comes close is that I was home. There was such a feeling of home and belonging and acceptance. And I actually began to run. I mean, in this life, I don't run. I mean, I've still got 6 pins and a plate holding my right leg together. My left one is lopped off above the knee. My back's all jacked up. But in that realm, I was whole. I was running. And you mentioned this previous, it did feel physical. When I was moving about the hospital, I didn't have any physical sensation about that. In this experience, wow, I could feel the energy under my feet. I could feel that intelligence in my calves and thighs. I was so joyfully running. And then I had this knowing again that it's just, I knew I wasn't there to stay. And at that time, there was this corridor off to my left. And I knew intuitively I'm to go that way. And I did. I went down the corridor. And as I did, I saw this crib at the end of the corridor. And Griffin, my little son, who I'd lost in the accident, had been sleeping in a crib at the time of his passing. He was just a toddler. So I raced to the crib, and I looked in, and there he was. And he was beautiful. He was sleeping. And I picked him up. Have you ever picked up a sleeping child?
Yes.
You know, the weight of them and the heat of them. And I picked him up, and he was like solid against me. I'm like, it's my little boy. I could feel his breath on my neck. In fact, I leaned over and I smelled his hair. You know, I mean, it's like, it's him. I mean, I can't emphasize the physical sensory, but I began to weep knowing he was okay and thinking, do I really get to say goodbye to him too? And as I held him, I did feel an immense presence behind me. It was overwhelming. And you can call it God, you can call it the divine. I just felt this presence. And with my upbringing, I thought, that's God. And I'm in trouble because God's going to judge me. And actually it was very heavy because I thought, my little boy is here because I crashed the car. You know, my little boy's life was cut short because I lost control and I crashed the car. And my thought was, I hope there's some way I can be forgiven. Now, here I am holding my precious little son. And as I'm having this thought, I hope there's some way I can be forgiven. And this almost felt physical. This divinity, this divine being seemed to wrap arms around both of us. And then it's like the whole lid came off. There was just this download of love and peace and what? Comprehension? I mean, I did have what they call a life review. Suddenly I saw my life. You know, I saw all the things that had happened. I saw my choices. And I was saying, well, that was a mistake. And, oh, I knew that was wrong, but I did it anyway. But there was so much love. And I'm sharing this for a specific reason. Because what was communicated is that I was as precious to the universe as that little boy I was holding, except it was magnified. And although it was a very personal experience, I knew that if I was that precious and that perfect and that divine, that we all are, each and every one of us, no matter where we come from, no matter our beliefs, no matter our preferences, no matter what, that we are literally a manifestation of divinity and a manifestation of pure unconditional love. And to wrap that up, I mean, I learned so much in those arms, and I was given a choice. I was told that I could be angry at what I call God for the rest of my life because of what happened, or I could be angry at myself for the rest of my life and feel guilty, or I could literally give my little boy back, like let go, like exercise my will. And with my upbringing where I'm like, oh, but God, I thought it was your will be done. And there was so much love. I was told, your will is my will. What do you want to do? I've come to the conclusion, there's only one rule in the whole universe, and that is free will. Anyway, and as I handed him back, I woke up in the hospital bed, back to the amputation and all the injuries and all that goes with it.
Wow. So very profound. Now, in this area, man, so many things. The one thing I do want to touch on real quick before anyone forgets this, the statement where this divine being sort of expresses to you, your will is my will. What do you want to do? To me, if that is not one of the more impressive sort of encapsulating statements of what unconditional love is, then I don't know what is. And I go extensively in my book to try to describe what unconditional love is and who we are in relation to our this divine being. But this experience is wonderful. And another thing that I remember you sharing before we started recording was you were seeking forgiveness. And I think the divine spoke to you about this. And I don't know if you mind sharing what you got as an answer.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I was having all those feelings of, I hope I can be forgiven, what this divine being communicated was, there's nothing to forgive. All is in divine order. You're seeking something which you already have. It is forgiven. It's given as before. It's given beforehand. It's forgiven. That you would have peace, that you would have joy, that you would have love. There was so much unconditional love. In fact, as I experienced my life, what came to me is that I had created it and that the entire universe, including this beautiful being, had supported it out of unconditional love. There was no conditions on that love, and I was the creator of my own experience. It was my judgments of things. In fact, as I judged my life and said, oh, that was wrong, ooh, that was a mistake, what was communicated to me is, that's your judgment of it, not ours. We love you. You're as beautiful and as perfect as that little boy you hold. Don't you realize how much you are loved? And like I say, it was a personal thing, but I knew that expanded to the entire universe, even beyond humanity. It's like everything was of the light and everything was a manifestation of love. It was only my judgments of it that made it otherwise. It was, yeah, it turned everything inside out that I thought I knew.
Jeff, it sounds like you had a spiritually transformative experience.
I think I did. I'm still trying to make sense of it sometimes, Roland. I mean, it's been 20 years, and there's still days I sit up and go, what do I do with that, you know?
I know. Listen, thank you so much for sharing. That was one of the more profound messages profound truths. I call them universal truths now, that I remembered after my awakening. And my own story was so fascinating. Like, I share it in the book, but I think it was on like the third day after the awakening. I was in my bed meditating. And at this time, the intelligence that was communicating with me was, I don't want to say they were peeved, but they were like, why are you trying to complicate this? It's simple. It's unconditional love. There are no conditions except the fact that you are. And I was like, are you kidding? Yeah. Like, yes. How else do you want us to? It's not complicated. But again, because of our bravery and because of the way the earth is designed, we come here and we have the free will and unconditional love to complicate it, which is what we do, and which is what has resulted, and that's our earth life experience today. But I appreciate very much that until you have a spiritually transformative experience, an awakening, an NDE, this information is not going to make just rational sense. You're still going to try to rationalize it. God loves me unconditionally if I do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, as soon as you say if, right, you're adding conditions to where there are no conditions. But let's keep going. I love this. I got to have you back for like 6 conversations.
I always come back, Roland. You can have me back anytime. And I do want to just touch on something, because I sometimes get flack, you know, for my experience. I'll say that and I'll say, oh, no, that's contrary to, you know, structured belief or whatever. I have no agenda in sharing this. It was just my experience. But I'll tell you what, my faith, my belief was not undone. It was literally expanded. I mean, my faith transformed into absolute trust. It's like, wow. And so, you know, I just want to be clear about some of these things. And yet, like I say, I still sometimes chew on it and say, how do I make sense of all this?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I really do. I couldn't agree more. I mean, now when people ask me, so Roland, are you still a Christian? I go, I'm more than that now. I get why Christianity exists. It's a stepping stone. It's like you needed to learn the alphabet to be able to make sentences and write books. And the reason it exists is because of unconditional love. The universe will always support you where you are. If you feel like you need Christianity, well, it's there. And if you don't need it, find something else. And But anyway, well, I got to get to these other parts.
I love that. I mean, people will say to me, they'll say, are you a Christian? I'll say, yes. And I'm Buddhist and Muslim
and I'm everything.
And all of it. And so are you. It's like, let's get over this us and them and this separation them. And come into oneness. And yet, even if you take Christianity, for instance, yes, I'm still a Christian. Absolutely. Jesus, to me, is the master. He figured it out. But I think many people misconstrue what he was teaching. I mean, he was literally saying, recognize your own divinity. You know, consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They don't spin and toil. Walk on the water, Peter. Why do you doubt? You know, greater things will you do than I if you just believe. I mean, that you know, that was all expanded in a beautiful way for me too, where I thought, wow, he wasn't here thumbing his nose saying, I'm better than you and I'm dad's favorite. He was literally holding up a mirror to say, don't you realize the magnificence that you are, you know? And so that shifted for me too.
Yeah.
He was saying, you said it earlier on, remember who we are. We're almost experiencing what we're not, that we might somehow embrace the fact that we are divine, eternal beings having this crazy human experience, right?
Yes. And that's actually a pretty good line for me to piggyback off to go on to this next question, which I have, you know, is we are experiencing what we're not in order to expand our consciousness to remember what we are and who we are. And so I was, it kind of just answers the question, but it was, right, you're in this place, you feel all these hypersensory details, right? You're running in this field, you're back whole, like you, it sounds like your body's back whole there, you're fully healed, no back pain, no lacerations, no amputations. But then again, I was asking, so what if we all can experience this place infinitely, you call it home. So it sounds like you were there before you came here because it's very familiar. And then the question becomes, so why on earth will you really come here? Why would you leave that place, right? And I don't know if you have anything else to add.
We must have been out of our minds, Roland. Why would we?
Right.
Why would we? You know, this is this might be a bad analogy, perhaps, but I hate sports analogies. But I used to play football, and we would sit in the locker room, and they'd put the X's and O's on the board, and everything worked out perfectly. Like every play was a touchdown, or every play was stopped at the line if you were on defense, depending on which side of the ball you were on. And that's a whole dichotomy too. Which side of the ball are you on? What's your perspective, right? But the crazy thing is, I think that's what we did. I think we sat in some realm somewhere and said, hey, let's do it like this. And the X's and O's were drawn. And even in my case, I might have said, wow, what do I really want to learn? Well, I want to learn forgiveness. How are we going to do that? Well, let's, you know, gosh, who's the hardest person for you to forgive? Well, gosh, it'd be myself. Well, let's create a scenario where you're driving down the road one day.
And that happens. Yeah.
And this happens. And who will help us with Jeff's creation? Tamara raised her hand and she said, I'll do it. I love you that much. I love you enough to leave. And Griffin, you know, he said, Dad, I'll break your heart in ways you can't even imagine.
It's so beautiful.
And,
you know,
and then Spencer, my oldest son, said, I'll do it and I'll walk with you your whole journey there, even if you're limping. And Tanya, my current wife, and we've adopted two boys. And everybody in my soul circle said, we'll do that. We'll go create this. Now, it looked great on the chalkboard, right? But boy, when we came here, it was just like when I was playing football. It looked great on the whiteboard or the chalkboard, but I did not realize, you know, what it was going to be like to get knocked down or to – how fast is a 4.440, you know, yard dash? Yeah. And you don't know without experiencing it. So I think we came here. It's a long answer to a simple question, but I think we said we want to experience it. We want to experience it. We don't want to talk about it. We want to literally go into duality and experience what we're not, or have this experience that our soul will expand and grow and learn. Perhaps. However, I think the eternal soul already knows. We just haven't experienced it yet. So we come to experience it I mean, and even, you know, we speak of masters, even Jesus, we talk about his suffering, what he went through, what, you know, well, it was for empathy. How would he, I mean, as he was being taken away to be crucified, he said, well, for this cause came I into the world. Now that's an enlightened soul. You know, when I had my Gethsemane, if you will, it's like, well, how could this possibly happen? Why me? You know, I'm a good person. This isn't supposed to happen to me. I wasn't enlightened, and I'm not enlightened yet, but I have some perceptions and some lessons where you say, okay, but look how my soul has grown, and what have I learned from it that I would have learned no other way?
Yes.
No other way.
Jeff, I'm so pumped listening to you. I'm so pumped. You're speaking my language, man. And I seriously think you had a spiritually transformative experience. I wanted to bet money on that. Like, man, I'm so pumped listening to you. I love it. I love it. So many truths. We're wrapping up here. And, you know, we've spoken about the powerful statement, there's nothing to forgive. There are no mistakes, right? The other thing in talking to you or in listening to actually your documentaries and a lot of your YouTube videos, right? Another thing you said was super profound is that you've realized heaven, if you will, was actually or is actually right here on earth too. And
yeah. And
that's something that I also remember. And it was funny to me because in the moment I realized it and I thought, oh my goodness, this heaven that we're seeking has always been, is here right now, and always will be here. But it's not where we're looking. That's like the big esoteric secret, right? It's not where you're looking.
Yeah, it's like the Alchemist. It was always right under my feet. I saw a funny cartoon the other day, and it was a man at the pearly gates, and that was St. Peter, you know. I mean, it was very, very Christian-like that way. But as he's coming to the pearly gates, he's asked the question, hey, how was your trip to heaven? So anyway, I mean, I learned this in a profound way. I mean, part of it was coming home from the hospital. I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't get in the wheelchair. My brothers had to lift me and put me in the wheelchair. My surviving son, my seven-year-old, who had been taken into my brother's home, he had lost everything I lost. He lost his mom. He lost his brother. He lost his father in many ways. And I was so concerned about him as I came home. And when we arrived home, and I had to go to my brother's house first, I stayed there for months with home health care, just getting me functioning. But there was Spencer, my little seven-year-old, looking out the window, watching as his uncles, you know, my brothers, were literally lifting me out of the car and putting me in the wheelchair. And I had, you know, I had a little electric wheelchair. I could just drive with my one good left hand. And I was so worried about Spencer. How's he going to react? And there's a point to this story. So I began to make my way to the house, and he came running out of the house, and he came running toward me, and he ran right past me. And I thought, I knew this was going to be hard. It's just too hard for him to accept. I mean, I had the one leg cut off. My right leg was in a brace sticking straight out. My right arm was in a sling, you know, holding it secure. I looked like some kind of a monster. And I thought, he's never going to accept me. I had the big colostomy bag from the intestinal damage. Anyway, he ran right past me. And I continued to make my way to the house. And as I turned to go up the ramp with the wheelchair to get in the house, I just looked to see where Spencer, my son, was. And he had actually run across the street, and he was knocking on all the neighbors' doors. And he was saying, come out, come out. My dad has made it home. Come see my dad. And I burst into tears, you know, and then he did come, and he threw himself on my lap, which just about killed me because I still had all the sutures, you know, from the abdominal.
Yeah.
This is how I learned that heaven's right here. He threw his arms around my neck. And I said, are you going to be okay with this? And he said, Dad, if you were nothing but a puddle of blood, I would still love you. And I cried, and he was holding on to me. And suddenly, here I was in a wheelchair holding my surviving son in this realm. And it was no less divine than when I had crossed over and held my son who had passed in those heavenly realms. Heaven was right here, if I would only accept it, if I would only be in that moment and realize that love is the most powerful force in the universe, no matter where it's experienced, here, there, or anywhere. And that, gosh, that love of my child was as great as the love of God. It was the same thing. It was unconditional love. And I'll tell you what, that's what saw me through. That's what healed me. And I know that's what will heal the world. I mean, if we can tap into that as humankind, heaven will be right here. There will be nowhere to go. We'll create it right here. Well, the master said that.
Yeah.
You know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Indeed.
It's like, let's do it right here. Let's create it now, you know.
Let's make those in heaven want to come here. Let this be the number one attraction in the cosmos, right?
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
I'll join the marketing team. Heaven, you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, this is so beautiful. I really love your stories and also your experience, the bravery. And one thing that I really do appreciate it is the diversity in which many people go about to remember these same universal truths, right? I've spoken to multiple people who have had near-death experiences. I haven't had one in the same light, right? Mine was through self-taught meditating, and I remembered the same universal truths. And the one thing that you touch on is these truths just expound on what you already know and just shine a new light on everything. And it makes you appreciate everything even more, to where because of that expanded consciousness, you're literally erasing boundaries as labels, as ideas, and just marveling at the fact that, oh, that's just another way to experience this consciousness, this love that we all are uniquely expressed. Right. Yeah.
I love that, Roland. And you're a wiser man than I am, because you don't have to go through a horrible accident or have a near-death experience to come to that same conclusion, to come to that same connection and that same love. You don't have to go through what I did. I'm a slow learner, and the universe must have known that.
The whole, maybe you're braver. I'll say you're braver than I was like, nah, man, give me the easy way. I have, you know, in truth, I've thought about this. And in one of my experiences, I came across some information about, you know, my reincarnations on the planet. But I've joked that one way to awaken trauma-free is to meditate. And I've you know, instead of going through a near-death experience or going through death, but yeah.
We all die to ourselves at some point. You know, I mean, we all mm-hmm. lay down the old human and rise up in a more divine form when we choose to. When we get to that point, and we're all on our own personal journey. And I think that's the thing too. Gosh, you know, just on
that's the key.
Honor someone else's path. I mean, certainly educate yourself, but honor the path they're on, because that's their path. And that's a divine sacred thing. And honor your own path as a divine sacred thing. But we can walk together arm in arm, even if our paths look completely different, we can still be one and connected. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I definitely would love to have you back, Jeff Olson. And with all my friends, I usually call them by their first name, last name, initials. So you would be J-O or Joe going forward.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Thanks, J-O. Guys, I hope you found a lot of that. In fact, I don't hope. I know you did. Please, by all means, if you have questions, connect with either one of us. Jeff, he's on Instagram at Jeffrey C. Olson, and I'll have links to his Instagram account in the notes section of this podcast. He also has a website, envoypublishing.com, where you can reach out to him. You can order his books there. You can also watch some of the more fascinating documentaries that have been created about Jeff and his story. And with me, you know how to reach out, roland@chenjiang.com, Instagram and Facebook at roland@chenjiang. And my new friend, J-O, I could not be happier and more grateful that you decided to share your story with me and my audience today. I really appreciate it.
It's an honor, Roland. Thank you for having me. Roland, you're the man. I'll just call you Ro.
Yeah.
Roland. I like it.
Thank you. I like it. I like it too. All right. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.